Good morning, Rabotai. Welcome to Breakfast in the Class. Breakfast in the Class today is dedicated in celebration of the birth of Gittel Bat Chaya, sponsored by Jack and Scott Mazal Tov Mabruk. Also dedicated in loving memory to Nishmat Yitzchak Ben Ephraim Vechava by Madeline and Mark Gabay. And dedicated in loving memory to Nishmat Mazal Menashe Baruchov, Aleim HaShalom, Menashe Ben Tzipora Zilpo, Aleim HaShalom, and Mazal Bat Lea Basanda Vechizkiya. Aleha Shalom, for the Askara, sponsored by the son, David Baruchov, and as well, dedicated loving memory of David Joseph Bibi, Aleha Shalom, son of Joseph and Sheila, Linishmat David Ben Shendel, sponsored anonymously, and as well, dedicated loving memory of Mrs. Lily Safra, Linishmat Leah Batchana, her philanthropy has reached so many throughout the entire world. The week of cold brew and breakfast in the class, sponsored by David E. Ash, and a new website where you can support Chazak.org by purchasing a t-shirt or hoodie. Honoring your capacity to good today and every day at capacityforgood.com. My friends, we also want to wish a Mazal Tov to the Maman family, Mazal Tov and Mabruk on the birth of a baby boy. Congratulations, fantastic. I guess all of the opening of the Aron, all the Peticha has helped. Hazak Baruch. Of course, and as well, we also want to wish Mabruk and a Mazal Tov to the Bibi and Aluf families. On the engagement of their children, Moriah to Moshe. Mazal Tov, we should be zochet to build Beit Ne'eman B'Yisrael. We should be zochet to have here in the Beit HaKnesset babies, bar mitzvahs, brit milahs, weddings, inshallah, all the good stuff, Be'ezat Hashem. Okay, let's begin. My friends, the Gemara tells us that the Jewish people, when they saw that the miracles happened for them, l'shana acheret, the next year, they instituted that there should be a holiday called Chanukah. And many of the rabbis ask, why was it that they waited a year until they got to the place where they made this takana? How come they didn't make the gezerah, the miracle of Chanukah, was so evident, the lights are burning for 8 days straight, why don't we on the spot take a look and decide, wow, what a miracle this is. This day, every year, we're going to celebrate the Nes Chanukah. Now, obviously, they could not do it on the day. They could not declare it on the day. Why? Because on the day of Chanukah, the miracle had not yet happened. They lit the candle. They thought it was one. They lit the oil. It was one day. Right? So they didn't know on that day. But 8 days later, when the other oils finally arrived from their oil destination, OPEC finally opened up the flow of oil. We got oil from Saudi Arabia. Wherever it came from, they got new oil. Now the oil stopped burning, right? 8 days later, they should have said at that spot, at that moment, right away, wow, Hazaku Baruch, from now on, every year we're going to have a celebration to celebrate this special miracle. Why did they wait l'shana acheret? Why did they wait another year? So there's many answers to this question, some of which we've discussed in previous years. But my friends, I want to continue this question with another question. I think that there's a beautiful lesson here. One of the most famous questions in all of Judaism, if not the most famous question on Chanukah, but is the famous question of the Beit Yosef. The Beit Yosef asks, why is it that we light Chanukah candles for 8 nights? Why is it we celebrate a miracle of Chanukah for 8 nights, if when they lit the candle, they lit the oil on the first day, that's normal. That it should burn for 1 day is normal. So how many days of miracles do you have? 7 days, not 8 days. So we should celebrate a miracle of 7 days. The first day is just regular lighting of oil that lights on any day of the week. Famous question that gets asked. Again, I've heard that there's over 500 answers to this question. Okay, someone put out a book only with answers to this question. Okay, now, my friends, aside and alongside all the many answers that you may have heard, I'd like to suggest something different, something that I think everyone will appreciate. Now, I want you to imagine for a second, if I took, I don't know if you've ever seen a magician. The magician has this thing, he's got all the cards, he's got something in his hand, all of a sudden, he goes like this, a fire, and there's a rose. Right? You ever see that? You know how they do that? I'm not a magician, so I could tell the tricks. How do they do that? There's something called flash paper. Flash paper is like a piece of paper. You light it on fire, and in a second, it just gives this burst of flame, and that's why it's not dangerous. No one's getting burnt from that poof of a flame. And then while you're distracted, the guy pulls out a rose that he's got in his pocket. You know, while you're not looking, he just goes like this, pulls out the thing, and he's got the... Now, flash paper burns literally in a flash. You have things that burn faster and things that burn slower. Is that obvious? Yeah? Now, what is different about something that burns faster and something that burns slower is the makeup of the fuel source, correct? Yes? So normally, the way we look at this is, there's a vial of oil, they put it into the jugs, they lit it on fire. And you know what? A day goes by, still burning. Hashem's like, you know what? Keep burning oil, keep burning, keep burning. He extended the oil burning capabilities another 7 days. According to this, we have a very good question of the Beit Yosef. But there's an alternate way that God could have done this miracle. And that is on day one, when they poured the oil into the jug, God could have changed the physical properties of the oil to something that burns slower. Now, that's a miracle on all 8 days, correct? But it's also a miracle on the first day, that oil could become something that was thicker, that was less flammable, that was more slow burning. That miracle happens in the first split second that you pour the oil into the jug. And therefore, we have 8 days of miracles, that each day, this thing, which is no longer oil, is now burning slower. My friends, why am I bringing up this answer? Not so I could throw my answer on the top of a pile of pre-existing answers, but rather, I'd like to suggest that there's something here, a possibility here, that maybe we're missing when it comes to what the Nes of Hanukkah is. The Gemara asks, "Ma Chanukah? What is Chanukah?" The Tanu Rabbanan, that the Torah, that the rabbis explained, and it tells us the whole story. And it tells us that they lit, and it tells us that they waited another year in order to institute the holiday. I'm saying, and I'm hoping that you'll understand from me today, a different message from Chanukah. What the Chachamim were trying to explain is that if you saw that the candles could change and could become a slow burn, they were capable of burning much brighter than they thought, much longer than they thought. If that was the nature of the candles themselves, the Chachamim waited a full year to be able to institute this, so that the people should not be fixated. They should not be focusing only in this wonder, on this thing over here, but rather they should notice something else. Because my friends, this miracle of Chanukah, it already happened. When did the miracle of Chanukah already happen? When God first gave the Torah to the Jewish people, He calls to Moshe Rabbeinu when they're still slaves in Egypt. And how does He call to God? How does God call to Moshe? He calls from the bush, Moshe, Moshe. Moshe looks, he can't believe, right? He sees this bush, he sees it's burning and it's not being consumed. He turns to look and God calls his name. Vayar Amonai Kisar Lirot. And God saw that Moshe had turned to look at this sight of a bush that could burn without becoming consumed. And the minute he turned to look, God calls him and he says, Moshe, Moshe. And Moshe says, Hineni, I am here. I always thought that this was an interesting thing. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu needs to be called by God in such an extraordinary way? Every other time, God says, Avraham, Avraham. God says, Shmuel, Shmuel. He calls people and they say, Hineni, Hazaku Baruch. God doesn't come each time with a magic trick. Right? It's not the case that every time, that Shmuel, Shmuel. So what did Hashem do? He pulls a rabbit out of a hat. Shmuel, Hineni. We don't find magic tricks being part of why God calls on someone or preceding God's call on someone. I think what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to communicate to Moshe was, I want you to realize, I want to free these Jewish people from Egypt. I want to make them stop being slaves. But my aim here is not the Emancipation Proclamation. I'm not trying here to go around freeing people from slavery and bondage. That's not my aim. Rather, you know what my aim is? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tips his hand. He says to Moshe, you know how you'll know? Ta'avdun et Elokim al har hazeh. When they will serve God on this mountain. I'm taking them out of Egypt because I want them to do something. I want them to be something. It's important to me that they understand that this is the reason why these miracles are happening to them. So Borei Olam, before he even gives Moshe Rabbeinu the call, before he makes him the leader to free the Jews, he says the most important thing is that the leader understands where he's going. Could you imagine, Bar Minan, you have one guy in the front who's got the flashlight on a dark night trying to get everyone out of a forest they're lost in. But the guy has no idea where he's going. So you have 1,000 people following a guy who has no clue where he's going. Obviously, they're going to get more lost. Obviously, it's not going to help. The person who you give the flashlight to, who is he? The only person that knows how to get out of the forest. Imagine if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand what it meant to free the Jews, where he was leading them. Where would they go? They'd go nowhere. So Moshe Rabbeinu is being told from the first moment, before God even calls his name, God says, I want you to understand something. You could burn a bush, ve'enenu ukal, and it doesn't get destroyed. On a simple level, it means that there's more fire in each person than they ever believed possible. It means that a person is capable of learning Torah, doing mitzvot, both of which compared to a flame and to light. Ki ner mitzvah, the Torah, or both of them are compared to a candle, to a light. So my friends, a person feels, I can't learn so much, I can't do so much, it's beyond my capacity, it's beyond my capability. God says to Moshe, you're about to take the Jews out. They're not going to think that they could do what we're about to ask of them. Imagine God takes the Jews, takes them out of Egypt. How many mitzvot do they have in Egypt? None. God gives them, as they're leaving Egypt, God gives them the mitzvah of milah. God gives them the mitzvah of korban pesach. Okay? Those are the two korbanot God gives them. What else does God add in Egypt? He adds the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. He teaches them about Rosh Chodesh. What else does he add in Egypt? He adds the mitzvah of Pidyon Peter Hamor. Those are all told to them in Mitzrayim, okay? Shabbat they get at Mara when they leave Egypt. But they have a few mitzvot. How many mitzvot do they have? 4? They get to Har Sinai, and where do they go? They go from 4 to 613. My friends, could you imagine? I come bring a bunch of people here, Shabbat afternoon class. Maybe some people in the audience, maybe they're keeping 4 or 5 mitzvot. I tell them, guys, listen, there's something I want you to do. Everyone's thinking, okay, which mitzvah is the rabbi going to ask us for? And I pull out a roll of toilet paper. And you can see there's writing on it. And I just roll it out the door. And I say, the first mitzvah is Peru Urvu. The second mitzvah, Rabotai. And I start going through. And I give you a list of 613 mitzvot. That's what Jewish people received on Har Sinai. Now, they got physically the Luchot, the Ten Commandments. But Moshe Rabbeinu goes up for 40 days, he receives all the Torah, he comes down, he teaches them all the Torah. They go from 4 mitzvot to 5 at Mara to how many at Har Sinai? And Moshe Rabbeinu, he needed to know that there was enough fuel in them to be able to burn without becoming consumed. You know why? Because perhaps the most important thing in the life and in the soul of a person is having a leader, a parent, that believes that they are capable. It's not always an easy thing for a parent to relinquish control to their child. It's not always easy. It's not always easy to give them true empowerment over their own life. But ultimately, if the child sees that you control every move they make, what do they learn? You think you're teaching them all the things you're controlling them to do. You think they're learning those lessons, but actually there's a lesson that they are learning which is much louder. And that lesson is, you are not capable of making any decisions. You are not trustworthy. So I have to decide everything for you. Moshe Rabbeinu, before becoming the Rav, the Rabbeinu of all of Am Yisrael, needed to learn that in every bush, even if it's thorns, even if it's not easy to approach that bush, still, inside of it burns a fire, and the material that is making up the source of the fuel of that fire is Eneno Ukal. My friends, such was the nature of the miracle of Chanukah. And if you take a look, you'll see in the Gemara asks, what was the miracle of Chanukah? And it tells us all about the oil. But no mention is made about the miraculous war that they waged against the Greeks. So although in Al Anisim we talk about it, we mention it, but when it comes to the Gemara's question, my Chanukah, what is Chanukah? The Gemara's answer is not about war. It's not about victory. The Gemara's answer is about lasting. Being a long-lasting flame. My friends, there's lots of people whose flame, it doesn't burn like the Ner Hanukkah. And the Chachamim needed to make sure that the people had time, space, capacity to get away from the wars that they'd won. To not think only about the miraculous victory that they had, but to contemplate that one second, a year later, when they had some gift of hindsight, they were able to look back and realize, one second here, those miracles that we did, it wasn't because I wielded a hammer. It wasn't because I was a great warrior. And you know what the proof is? The proof is when it came to something like lighting the menorah, which we commemorated, which we did when we finished the war, there I had no hand. I had no capacity or capability to make that fire last longer, burn brighter than it did. It's impossible. So if I overachieved at war, I can understand that overachievement, that outsized accomplishment, it doesn't come from me. It came from the flames. It came from the Nerot Chanukah. It came from Borei Olam. It came from God. Some people's Judaism doesn't burn like a Ner Chanukah. It burns like flash paper. They do a lot of beautiful, bright flashes. They don't come to shul for God knows how long. They come to shul and they make a big donation and they pray and they put their hands in the air. Big show. And by the way, I'm not doubting that it's real. I love it. It's awesome. You're burning bright. But my friends, the Torah doesn't want you to burn bright occasionally. It doesn't want you to be the thing that makes flashes of inspiration or fire or fireworks. What we want is something that lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts. Your Judaism needs to be the energizer bunny. That's what we're looking for. And that's the siman of the Ner Hanukkah, something that burns and burns and does not become consumed. And the crazy thing is, my friends, that in every person's life you have this. I can't do more. I can't learn more, I'm too tired. I don't have time. I can't come to shul more. They have too hard to come in the morning. Too hard to come in the afternoon to the synagogue to make a minyan in my office. Too hard, it's too much, Rabbi. Kosher, too much. Talat HaMishpat, too much. Not carrying now on Shabbat, you want me to carry? Too much, Rabbi. I can't. I know myself. God says, I know you better than you know yourself. I made you. My friends, this is one of the beautiful things about Nerot Chanukah, as we see and we understand that their power is everlasting. My friends, I want to end with this. Rabbi Beryl Wine once went to go give a speech. He was brought to give a speech in Detroit. And he gives a speech, end of the speech, beautiful speech. A man comes up, everyone wants to shake his hand. Tall guy comes up to him, clearly not a Jewish guy. Comes up to him and he says, Rabbi, that was a very special speech. You know, I just want to tell you, I want to tell you a story. He says, you know, I'm the editor of the Detroit Free Press. Have been for years, he says. He says, but when I was a young boy, so my mother brought me and my brothers, she brought us over from Ireland to America. They were Irish. They came to Detroit. She had no job. She's looking for anything. She finally found the job cleaning a house for a Jewish family in Detroit. And she'd come every day, and she was there for a very, very long time. Anyway, the family goes away on a small vacation during the holiday, and she had the key. She always came cleaned up, etc., etc. So she decided, you know what, I'm going to do something nice for this very religious family. What is she going to do nice for them? They all go away. She decides, I'm going to decorate their house, make them a beautiful Christmas decorations for them to come home to. The lights, the tinsel, the wreath, the tree, the stockings over the fireplace. They're going to come back. They're going to feel the feelings of Xmas like they, you know, it would be the most beautiful Xmas of their life. What does she know? She's Irish. She doesn't know Jews, right? So she decorates the place. Unbelievable. Anyway, they're pulling up. All of a sudden, the wife looks at their house, Jewish house on the block, full of Jewish, other Jewish people. They see the house. Yeshu all over. A bottom, the place is covered. Lights flashing, Santa Claus, deer, who knows what, okay? It's going crazy. The wife very upset. I can't believe it. The kids are like, wow, you bad, you have to yell at her. You should fire her, this, that. Okay, it's so embarrassing. Can't believe she did this. How does she not know? What is she not educated? Anyway, the father says, listen, everybody, stay in the car. Everyone stay here. Calm down. He goes in the house. He walks in. He says, Mrs. O'Neill, right? Mrs. O'Neill, thank you so much for these beautiful decorations. They're very, very special. They look gorgeous, I'm sure, in your house. But in our house, we don't really celebrate Xmas. It's not our thing. You know, we have a different God and a different religion, etc., etc. And, you know, and although we, you know, the gesture was so beautiful, we know you only wanted to make a nice holiday season for us, but, you know, this is really not our way. So, you know, come, why don't we, you know, it's not our custom, it's not, so I'm sure, you know, we appreciate it so much, but maybe let's take it down before everyone comes in the house, the wife and kids, because it's not really, it's not something that we do, it's not something that we celebrate. Anyway, she says, of course, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to offend you, da 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 da. They go together very quickly. They take the stuff down. They pack it up, put it in the boxes. And then the family comes in from the car to a non-Xmas house yet again. Anyway, the man says, my mother came back, yeah, and she told us all about the story. Yeah, she never forget the kindness and the respect that she was shown by these Jewish people. And she always told us about this story, about how she was treated with such dignity and such respect by this Jewish man. And she said that the Jews are special people. And I learned from her that she learned from you how to treat people kindly and always take their feelings into respect. And he said, and that is why, right, in the Detroit Free Press, there has never been an editorial, not once, that was critical of Israel. And as long as I'm the editor of the newspaper, nor will there be, because I understand what it means, what Judaism is all about, and how you treat yourselves, each other, but also people that are not from the faith as well. My friends, sometimes a person is faced with a situation where they don't understand the outcome of what's going to be. And it is something that maybe is a very small thing that can actually have tremendous dividends. You know, today in Detroit, there's a huge population of an Arab population. And I imagine that having a newspaper in the region, in the area, that was constantly printing, critical things about Israel, might set off some of the feelings of the locals, who anyway, in general, have a close proclivity and a kinship with the Palestinian cause, if you will. So you never know what the fact that a newspaper like this not printing an article, You never know the value of that and the radicalization that could have happened from someone reading an article like that in a state or in a city like that. My friends, this is an irrelevant moment, at least with regards to everybody else. You come home and the cleaning lady put up Xmas decorations. And you could yell at her, or you could treat her nicely. But you don't realize that thousands of readers and people taking in that information from this newspaper all comes back to that one decision. Everyone stay in the car. Let me go and explain to her gently, kindly, what it is that she did wrong. And help her actually take down these decorations. My friends, if you burn hot and fast, and you always shine only in the big moments, then you miss the small moments. And there's a funny thing about small moments. Almost always, it is those small moments that turn into far greater moments down the line. Moshe Rabbeinu witnesses a bush burning in the middle of the desert. He has no idea what's about to happen. He has no idea that this is going to impact not only the course of Jews in Egypt, but the course of the Jewish people forever and the course of the world forever. But he turns to this bush and he says, Asura na ve'ereh. Let me see what to do here. My friends, that is the miracle of Chanukah. That is the message of Chanukah. And that is the challenge of Chanukah. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen.